What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
So today's episode is probably the most strongly I've felt I've got something to say, and I want to use this platform to say it. So the first few minutes of this, I'm going to channel my inner Darius and go on a bit of a monologue here. The theme for today's show is how you want things to be versus how they are. And I want to provide a little background and context. The Lakers have always had a historically best of his generation type of star on the team, with the exception of only about 7 years in their entire history, going all the way back to George Mikan. And the last time that was the case was when Magic suddenly retired with the HIV announcement. So this is between 91 and 96. And I think that we can look at that period of time as an analog to where the Lakers are right now and where they've been the last couple of years. During that period of time, Jerry West didn't sign any free agents. He let AC Green walk. They cut Byron Scott. James Worthy retired with his bad knees. They traded Sam Perkins for Doug Christie. And over the course of that period of time, rather than trying to get a quick fix, what West did is he accumulated young talent. And your Anthony Peeler, Doug Christie, Nick Van Exel, George Lynch, right? This is before we get into Eddie Jones. We'll get to that in a second. And they added that with some existing veteran talent and guys like Sadale Threet and Vlade Eldon Campbell. And so Van Exel's rookie year, that was a 33-win team. They went 33-49, and it was the first time they'd missed the playoffs since the 70s. So that summer, Jerry West traded a 95 first-round draft pick, which ended up being Michael Finley with the 21st pick, who is a very good player in his own right. But he traded it to the Suns for Cedric Ceballos and drafted Eddie Jones. And all of a sudden, they were this really fun young team that over the course of the next couple of years made the first or second round of playoffs. They upset the Seattle Supersonics 1 year. And it was, for those of us old enough to remember, that was probably the funnest non-title Laker team of our lifetimes. And that is the environment in which Shaq joined, right? And then once they, in signing Shaq, they traded away Anthony Peeler, George Lynch, and Vlade to create the cap space in order to do it. And obviously in trading Vlade, they got Kobe, which all in one summer, you get this, historically, it was the best summer any GM has ever had, right? And then after that, Ceballos got traded for Robert Horry, and Van Exel got traded for his Cancun incident. And then Eldon and Eddie were eventually traded for Glenn Rice. And so none of the members of that really fun 93 to 96 type squad persisted until stayed on the team until they eventually won the championship in 2000. But I would argue that all of them, that the championship team, the Shaq Kobe years, were not possible without them. Now, whether that was either setting the foundation for an attractive team for Shaq to come to, or it was, you know, Ceballos didn't really fit alongside Shaq anymore, but it turned into Robert Horry, who was obviously huge in their run, or a guy like Glenn Rice turned into Horace Grant, you know, and they won championships with each. So even if they weren't directly responsible for those titles, they led to guys that did. And obviously Vlade turned into Kobe. So I bring all of this up to draw parallels to today's team. And the difference between then and now is guys like Vlade and Eldon. And what had happened in the late 80s and early 90s, Jerry West really nailed a couple of late first-round picks in Vlade and Eldon. And they were never great players. They were never going to lead a team to a championship, but they were solid starters. And those guys represented the foundation of a team that was able to stay competitive while the young guys, your Van Exels, your Eddie Jones, Lynch, Peeler, all those guys were just getting into the league. And they were older rookies in that respect, right? And then, you know, the difference between then and now is that the reason the Lakers are in the position that they are now is they didn't acquire a quality player in the draft between 2006 and 2013, with the exception of Marc Gasol, who was traded for his brother, right? Bynum could have been that guy that would have been the really good starter, that would have been the best player to put around young players, but he was traded and he wasn't going to be able to hold up anyway. So the end result that we see now is this team that's led by kids, which is a bad place to be, and you're going to be a bad team. But I would argue that where the roster is right now is not a failure of the kids, but a failure to have anything but quality kids on the roster that are worth a damn. So all of that said, in terms of the approach that the Lakers take to the summer, I would like to see them, rather than look to get their Shaq right now, I'd like to see them look for their Vlades and Eldons and eventually their Cedric Ceballos that can push everybody into their rightful role and grow. I think this team is a lot further away from contention, and this fan base is really starting to get anxious. So that's my first chance, my little 5-minute monologue on what I would like to see this team do, which I don't expect them to do. But I don't know, with all of that laid out, Darius, what do you think, man?
No, I totally agree. And I actually think that they tried that this past summer.
Yeah. And Dang and Mozgov represented the Eldon and Vlade.
Yeah. In a real way. Right. So the difference is, though, is that those guys were acquired with big money free agent contracts, right? Rather than the sort of more masterful GM maneuvering that Jerry West displayed in the examples that you laid out, right? That, and obviously, like, the difference in eras and how trades and the salary cap and all that stuff worked, right? Like, and I think that what we're seeing today is a lot of pushback against those types of moves that the Lakers were able to make, like, through that period, the Lake Show period, that ultimately became the triangle period, the dynasty period.
But what have they done from a straight CBA perspective? What did West do in that era that isn't replicable in today's era?
Well, the Shaq signing, for one.
Well, sure, sure.
Right? And so, which is basically the foundation of what became a championship team, right? Like, if in the lockout, the 98-99, the lockout in 99 wasn't a direct response to a Shaq trade, right? That lockout was always seen as a response to, like, Kevin Garnett's contract, right? Mm-hmm. But Shaq's contract was very similar to Kevin Garnett's. It's just that he was Shaq, right? Like, looking back, Garnett got even more money than Shaq. He got, like, I don't know. I can't even remember the number.
He made, like, $300 in the course of his career. Tom's going to look it up right now. But
yeah, it was an ungodly sum of money, though, that Kevin Garnett signed for an amazing number of years.
Right.
Right. And there was actually a lot of young players who got very similar contracts like that because of the idea that you could extend guys for huge money for very long-term contracts, even though they were just coming off of their third year of their third season, right? Guys like Antoine Walker and, right, like, a lot of guys in that era got huge money, which sort of was, like, a shame for, like, Kobe, right? Because Kobe actually got caught right on the wrong end of that, being in the draft class after Kevin Garnett.
He was in, right? The 99 lockout, they did a vote amongst the players union to accept the deal, and five guys voted no, and there was like 300 guys that voted yes, and Kobe was one of the five that voted no, because he knew that that he was going to be getting the shaft.
He was going to get screwed.
Yeah.
He was going to get screwed.
And that, yes, Garnett deal was in 97-98 was 6 years, $126 million, which is a lot of money today. But in 97-98 was just, basically was twice as much. Yeah.
Yeah, it was basically like the Mike Conley contract. Right. Like, or maybe even more than that. I mean, in equivalent money.
Right.
And that was, we wring our hands a lot about the Dang and Mozgov stuff, but I mean, that was the brilliance of Jerry West, right? And And that whole idea that the Lakers, that Lakers exceptionalism sort of comes from that, from those types of moves that Jerry West made. But he was playing with a different handbook and a different rule book, right? He went to Orlando and Shaq and basically said, we'll just give you more money.
Sure, but I'm talking a step before. For one, they had the salary cap in place even still, right? That what changed was the fact that you had after that contract in the 99 CBA, the idea of a max player contract, right, where you nobody could sign for more than a certain amount. And
yes,
that's ultimately what changed. But I'm not necessarily I'm talking about the steps that led up to Shaq and about and creating a team that is appealing to a guy like Shaq.
Yeah, and that's where the previous administration, right, like the Mitch and Jim front office, they did some of that, right? Mm-hmm. And so you know, Van Exel was a major key in that, right? Because he was that second round pick that ultimately became a star, mm-hmm. right? Like he made an all-star game
right.
with the Lakers. And he hit on his lottery pick with Andy Jones. And then he nailed sort of those late, those picks that were in the teens, right? With, right. Peeler and Lynch, those guys had long NBA careers, but they were mostly like role players,
right?
And so you can look at some of what Mitch and Jim did in terms of it remains to be seen a bit, right? What Russell turns into, or Randall, or even Ingram, right? But those guys have potential to be really, really good players and make the All-Star game, very similar to like Eddie Jones or Andrew Bynum, right?
Right.
From a different example, right? You mentioned Bynum, so I just wanted to bring him up. And I actually think the key to those Lake Show teams was actually, just like you brought up, was Vlade and Sadale Threet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Threet allowed them to still be a quality team for longer. And then when the roster turned over a little bit, they were able to grab Van Exel and sort of replace Threet. And then when they did miss the playoffs, they snagged Eddie Jones and then flipped that trade for Sabalos, just right. like you said. And those are the types of deals that the Lakers have not made.
But even then, just the presence of those quality veterans, like, I mean, what is Van Exel and Peeler and Lynch, like, how good would they have been without Eldon and Vlade and Sadale Threet and Sam Perkins before the trade? Like, those are 20-win teams. And that's the, you know, I don't want to necessarily live in the mid-90s for too long, but I wanted to bring that up as an analog of, like, what's wrong with this team and what's wrong with its roster construction isn't the young guys. It's the lack of the quality veterans, which, like you said, they tried to accomplish, and it appears to be, you know, have been a swing and a miss in this offseason, but I think where the Lakers need to look first.
Well, that's why, too, I was so frustrated, and I mean, I hate to sort of re-legislate the past, right? But that's why I was so frustrated with the approach that they took in previous offseasons in terms of star hunting in sort of Kobe's twilight years, right?
Right, right.
And that... that when I think they waited for the year for the cap to explode for them to chase their role players, which I mean, even in present sight, that was a bad move, but in hindsight, it looks even worse because they could have theoretically they could have been chasing a guy like Isaiah Thomas.
Well, right? they even had a guy like Kent Bazemore was on the team.
Yes,
didn't even give him a qualifying offer, right?
Just moves like that, right? And they made up for it a little bit with like the Lou Williams signing, right? And even if they would have been able to keep like Mike D'Antoni, for example. I think that the Nick Young contract would have proven to be a very good value contract mm-hmm. if he would have been playing in a style and for a coach that would have optimized his game.
Well, we even saw that this year, right? Like, he well outplayed his contract this season.
Yes, exactly. And so I don't want to necessarily like bury them too much, but it was the strategy of chasing stars at the expense of sort of filling your coffers with these sort of value veteran players who could up your win totals to maybe like the mid-30s or whatever. And maybe, and then though, but the other side of that coin is that if the Lakers are winning, you know, anywhere from 32 to 38 games a year and still missing the playoffs, right?
Right.
Or even, and even in the competitive West, you know, a couple of years ago, they could have won like 40 games or 42 games and still missed the playoffs. Then they don't sort of have these potential foundational young players either. And so I see both sides of this. But yeah, I think though that this does pivot us towards this summer and sort of what should the approach be. And it sounds like you're arguing for going after some of these mid-tier players instead of trying to get a player who will play in the All-Star game next year when it's in Los Angeles.
I think I get a growing sense of impatience from Laker fans and even from the front office in that the Lakers have been bad to the point of being embarrassingly bad for the last couple of seasons. And I think that's really wearing thin on a fan base that isn't used to that. I also think that, you know, some swing and misses with guys like Mozgov and Deng has amplified, it's put the young guys out front in a way that neither they or most young guys are ready to be. And I'm getting the sense, what I'm most worried about is the Lakers making moves that might get them to the first round of the playoffs and putting a pretty hard ceiling on what they'd be able to do going forward. So I again, the theme that, and I even told you, you know, before we started recording this, like, this is the most like convicted I've felt about having something that I want to say. And the idea of how you want things to be versus how they are is something that has been a reoccurring theme even in my life. And it's something that I put a lot of stock in. And I think the Lakers are several years away in the best case scenario from being a championship contender. And quite honestly, I'm not sure even that's going to be a possibility before the Mozgov and Deng contracts expire. So that's three more years from now. So the idea of kind of cashing in what we have right now and seeing if we could put all the, you know, go all in and see if we can put something together, I think we fall really, really short. Also coinciding with, you know, a window of a Golden State team and a couple of other teams that they're going to be in this spot where they currently are for the next 3 years. I think that's, you know, fairly, I can say that with a good degree of confidence. So I think that we're getting impatient and not correctly evaluating where we actually are. Like, we wanted to be a 35-win team this year, 30-win team, right? And that's not what we are. And we wanted to add quality veterans, and we wanted Mozgov and Deng to work out, but they didn't. And the front office needs to proceed with the reality of the situation rather than based off of what they wanted it to be and trying to skip ahead. And that's my biggest fear this offseason.
So I can certainly understand that. And I can even say that I agree to a fairly strong extent even. I also think though that the front office needs to take a hard look as well and just map out a plan and understand what positive steps forward actually look like and how they want to define what those positive steps actually are.
So what does that mean to you? Let's talk about what does it mean, what do you want versus how it's going to be?
So, I mean, we talked about this some on on the last pod, but let's just say let's hold off the conversation about the number three pick for a second, and let's just look at the Lakers' young players moving forward, right? The guys who are actually on the team, and there's basically six of them, right? It's the five who have started the last couple of games, you know, Russell, Clarkson, Ingram, Randall, and Nance, and then the six is Zubats. Right? So that's six young players. And we've talked about in the past that six is basically, you know, 60% of a 10-man rotation. And I think you would probably argue that a 10-man rotation is probably too many people to begin with.
I would.
Right? That you probably want it to be around nine players. And if a 10th guy plays, it's very sparingly in terms of either if he's appearing every game. But most likely he would be sort of that guy who plays maybe every other game or every third game, right? Or break in case of emergency. We've got multiple guys in foul trouble, or a guy gets injured, or whatever, right? Like a guy who's capable of playing, but it's fine if he's not, right? And so six players, that's 2/3 of a 9-man rotation, and that's probably too many. And so I think that the front office should be looking at who of their young players are guys they are comfortable moving for better fitting veterans. Very similar to the moves that you discussed earlier during the 90s.
You're the GM of the Lakers, and with your kind of gauge on what's happening around the league and who might be available and whatnot. Who specifically would you be looking to move of those six?
So of those six, three of them would be on the table for me right away. That's Clarkson, that's Nance, and the guy who I would be looking at who's on the fence for me is Julius Randle. And I love Julius Randle, so... Okay. Even me saying that's that.
Interesting.
Right? The reason why I say Clarkson is because Clarkson's a replicable player. So the guys I'm talking about are replicable players, and they're the lesser of the prospects, right? And so I'm comparing Clarkson to Russell and Ingram. Right? And so I'd rather keep Russell and Ingram.
Okay.
I'm comparing Nance to Randall. I'd rather keep Randall. But if I have to trade Randall, at least I have Nance. And then on top of Nance, I still have Zubats. Right?
Right.
And so that's my formula within that. And that very much falls in line with sort of that discussion of the prospect hierarchy that we've discussed in the past, right? Where and if I needed to, Zubats would be in that midst. Well, in that mix too, but he doesn't make enough money, he's also so young, and it gets tricky.
Yeah, I don't think either of us would argue any of the players are untouchable necessarily. It's just kind of like, what are you proactively pursuing?
Yes,
right.
So what am I? And I don't know if you can get an all-star player for any of those guys, right? Like even if you traded three of those four guys, right? Like, you can't trade Julius Randle, Jordan Clarkson, and Zubats for any of those sort of star players that are on the quote-unquote trade block, right? Not you can't get Jimmy Butler for that. You can't get Paul George for that. I don't even think you can get DeMarcus Cousins for that.
Right.
You know, which is way more than what the Kings gave up.
Right. Right.
So I don't necessarily have a name for you in terms of a target. No, I'm just talking more.
So, but if you're looking to move, you know, one or two or even all three of those guys, what is it that you're looking for in return in even a broad sense? Like, what does this team need that can coalesce them like a Cedric Ceballos did in the mid 90s, right? Where had a guy like Van Exel had to be the man on the team and the leading scorer, they wouldn't have been a playoff team at that point. Same with Eddie Jones, right?
Sure.
But Ceballos' presence kind of pushed everybody into there. And that's kind of what I see with our young players. Like, you know, D'Angelo Russell is not going to be the best player on a playoff team, but could he be the second or third best player? And more likely third at this point, although we'll see how big of a jump he takes from one year to the next. I think he could be the third best player on a playoff team in the very near future. So who are the types of guys that you think can kind of coalesce this group of young talent?
So I've said this to you before, but a defensive wing that slides between Russell and Ingram, right? That sort of maybe he can be low or high usage. If he's a high usage player, then I think that that's fine, because I think that Russell and Ingram can both play off of the ball capably, as long as he can be like a passer. If he's a low usage guy, I think that's fine too, because I think that Russell is a high usage player already, and that he can continue to be a high usage player, and he's a good passer. I think Ingram's a good passer as well, and that he can develop into a higher usage player, right? Like sort of in that 22 to 24 usage rate, and not in that like 28 to 30 range, right? Which is kind of where real star players live.
Right.
And then I'd be looking for, so a defensive wing, an example of a type of a guy is like an Avery Bradley type of guy, right? That guy, this year his defense has been more spotty than what it has been in the past, but a guy who has some dog in him, right? Who will get after you defensively, who can shoot the ball, who can create his own shot a little bit, and that can just slide right in and sort of be that other wing. If Randall or Nance or Zubats and end up leaving, I think that you need a defensive big who has some wheels to him. Like you know, again, another example of that type of a guy is like a Nerlens Noel, right? We've talked about him a fair amount in the past, but a guy who can play pick and roll, who can play above the rim on both sides of the floor in terms of a shot blocker and in terms of a finisher. Who can then have some gravity to him as a role man. And to me, what this team really lacks, and it's not even to me, listen to Luke Walton talk about David Nwaba, right? David Nwaba was a pickup essentially off of the scrap heap. He was a D-League player and was like undrafted. Like, I don't even think he was drafted to the D League, right? Like, I think he made the team off of a tryout. So,
right. Yeah, he was walk on. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, when you hear Walton sort of talk glowingly about him as a player, that's how I know this is a type of player who the Lakers did not have on their roster, right? And they could use another one of that type of guy, but even better than him. A guy with more pedigree, a guy with even better size, a guy with an outside shot to go along with those other skills. And if you're talking about the next contending Lakers team and you're looking at if ideally the Lakers keep their top draft picks who they invested the highest picks in, because those guys, I think, naturally have the highest ceilings, then I'm looking to fill in the gaps around them. And that means mostly defense, shooting, and athleticism.
Yeah, to answer the question that I posed, I'm going to take a bit more of a, I guess, existential route than you did there. I think the Lakers need to be looking to add to what they have rather than shuffle around the chairs on the Titanic, right? Where, you know, looking to, I don't think they should be pursuing trades unless something is very advantageous. And I think they should be looking to add quality players over the course of free agency, to which the natural response is like, oh crap, well, are we going to have enough space to, you know, to sign Paul George or two stars in 2018. I think that's a bad approach. Now, if the Lakers want to create the space necessary to sign Paul George in 2018, and it comes to that, they're not going to have a problem doing that. They have enough young players on rookie contracts to be able to make that happen. And they're able to stretch both Mozgov and Deng. Their combined salaries is just underneath the limit of what you can do that with. Now, that comes with the problem of having dead money at that point. But if the Lakers want to create space for a Paul George or anybody else, they're going to be capable of doing that. But what I'm really looking for are quality players that can get this up to a, you know, 30, 35 win team. And I know that, you know, there's probably people listening to me right now, you know, screaming in their cars or wherever you listen to the show going, you know, what the hell? We don't want to be that. And that's where we are right now. We're going to have to cross through that territory before we get into contender status. And you brought this up earlier, Darius, where the Lakers have had a mistaken approach of all or nothing, all star or nothing, where we're going to only spend our cap space on these superstar players. And if we don't, we're just going to wait until the next offseason. And I think the reality is that they're going to have to cross through that mediocre territory on the way to good. And quite frankly, I don't think that the superstars are going to be helpful, or even the all-star players are going to be particularly helpful until the Deng and Mozgov contracts come off of the books. And I know that's going to be a very unpopular opinion, but I think we're much further away than we're talking. And I think that, you know, sights are set toward this summer or 2018. And really, I don't think we're anywhere close to that.
Along with Stu Lance, I'm Chick Kern, and we're having a lot of fun. Hope we're going to bring you some enjoyment too.
For the listeners of the Laker Film Room podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you an opportunity to check out their service. I recommend Attitude, Develop a Winning Mindset on and Off the Court by Michael Sheridan, which offers life lessons and competitive philosophy from one of men's college basketball's best coaches, Jay Wright. It chronicles how the buzzer-beating, national championship-winning Villanova Wildcats were 20-plus years in the making, as Jay Wright provides insights into his leadership secrets and how to develop a winning attitude. Now, as a fan of a team with a really young group of guys, I'm curious to hear how Coach Wright details how to maintain a positive mindset. I mean, we all need it these days. Make sure you go to audibletrial.com/almighty to get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial.
All right, so now that we've spoken about what we want over the course of this summer, let's take a look at what we think they're going to do. So recently, Jeannie Buss made some comments that, you know, made some waves amongst Laker fans of that she'd be heartbroken if they don't have an all-star on the team next year because Lakers host the all-star game. And this is something where that's been brought up before, but perhaps not as overtly as having the owner state that clearly. So, there's been a lot of, rumors and innuendo and just discussion amongst Laker fans about, you know, does this mean who's getting traded, right? And how are they going to acquire this all-star caliber player, with Paul George obviously being the most obvious of that group. So with all of that said, and with that context, Darius, what do you see? How do you see the Lakers actually proceeding this offseason?
I've been thinking about this long, long and hard, right? Because I certainly have heard from multiple people, and it's been sort of hinted at, like in the press as well, that that the Lakers want sort of an all-star player to play in Staples Center when they host the all-star game next
That's
year.
That's a terrible way to run a franchise.
So I would say, if that's the only reason, yes, I would agree with you. I also think, though, that the Lakers, and whether this is true or not, and I don't think that there's a way to say definitively about this, either way, is that having better players on your team makes your team more attractive.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And there's this idea. So just to go back to the 90s a second, right? The team that Shaq joined had won, I think, 53 games the season before. But they also gutted that team, essentially, to get Shaq. Right.
They gutted a lot of the ancillary guys, but they kept, I mean, their top, aside from Vlade was the only guy that moved, you know, so they kept
Jones
and Sabalos. And now they traded Sabalos so, 8 games into the season next year because he didn't fit with Shaq. But
yes. And for a better fitting piece with Robert Horry. Right. Right. But so, yes, when I say gutted is so gutted was the wrong term. They turned over.
Yes.
You know, about half of their rotation. From the season before.
Right.
You know, Lynch and Peeler
Vlade.
And Divots, right? And obviously when you trade Divots, essentially, when you swap Divots for Shaq, then that's not really turning over your roster, so.
Right, right.
Right? But anyways, so the point I was going to make, though, is that Shaq joined essentially a 50-win team. I think that when you look to the, you know, 2000... to the 2000s or 2010s that we're in now, right? Next year, 2017, where we're at today, is that there is this idea that star players want to play with each other because they think that they will turn a team into a team that's winning games, even if they are currently at nothing, right? Rather than, so Durant, for example, joined this super team, right? But the example before that was this idea of the Miami super team. Right. And there's always more than one way to build a contender. And I think it's sort of foolhardy to think that there's some super trend that all we have to do is do this and then this is going to happen. But I'm of the mind that if the Lakers can get their hands on an all-starish player for the right mix of young talent that they give up, that they should do that.
But so do you think they will do that, for one?
I think they would if the right deal was there. Mm-hmm. And I think that they will be actively looking for the right deal.
And so what does that mean, though? Do you trade do you think they would trade Ingram if push came to shove for Paul George? Not saying
I
if
think
you would
George
do
is so no, I think that George is the trickiest name out there in terms of establishing what would be a viable offer, just because of the sense that he is actually the one guy that a year from this summer seems like he is actually gettable, right? This idea that DeMarcus Cousins would come to LA, or that even like a guy like Gordon Hayward this next summer, those guys sort of have zero ties, right? Even if you have this pipe dream of like, well, Russell Westbrook has like this opt-out and James Harden, right? They're LA guys. Those guys have never really been linked to the Lakers in any real way. With George, I think that where there's smoke, there's fire.
No, I think it's legit too from the few things, bits of rumors and scuttlebutt as well that I've heard, that I do think that there's a legitimate route to LA for George.
Yeah, and so just you bringing up his name specifically, that's the tricky one. To me, I would start to think of other names. A name that I keep coming back to, and this is not sourced in any way, shape, or form, it's just sort of me thinking about potential dominoes that could fall, and a guy whose name I think will come up over the summer is Kevin Love.
Interesting.
And this is actually, I talked to you the other day and I said, oh, I've got a question for you.
Yeah,
during
yeah.
the podcast,
you kept
right?
me in suspense until right now.
Yes.
Yes.
And Kevin Love was that question.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to ask you, A, if Kevin Love is the type of player that you think would be a good guy to try to sort of inquire about during the offseason, and B, if yes to A, what type of package would you be looking to deal? The reason why I bring up Kevin Love specifically is that I have my concerns as a basketball fan. I have my concerns about the Cavs. I think that there is just as good a chance that they reach the finals as they flame out in the second round at this point, based off of how they look.
Yeah, they're looking legitimately bad, like even beyond just a flip the switch type of bad. They look
legitimately bad. Yes, there's just a lot of issues surrounding their team, right? Like defensively, whether or not some of their guys are actually going to be ready to make a long run again, right? Like I think it's sometimes easy to look at a team like the Cavs and say, well, they've got LeBron, and yes, they do, but those other guys aren't LeBron, right? And so LeBron has this tremendous track record of being able to do all these things. Like LeBron can turn it on, right? He has a history of making the finals basically every year. We know that he has another level that he can reach, even if for long portions of the season he looks like he's just sort of coasting or it's not all the way there with him. Does Kevin Love have that gear? Does Kyrie Irving have that gear? Can J.R. Smith find sort of the same level of play, right? These are all just sort of these questions that I have in my mind about the Cavs.
Sure.
And which brings me back to Kevin Love as sort of that guy who has always been sort of the Chris Bosh, right? That sort of odd man out within the construct of their big three. And so I wanted to bring him up to you just to sort of bounce it off of you, and I didn't want to do it in advance because I wanted it to be fresh.
No, I appreciate that. It's interesting. Love is one of those players that I've never been a big fan of his game, although he has gotten better on the defensive end, and just things like rotations and closeouts and things that just kind of drove me nuts when he was a younger player and putting up 15 rebounds and 24 points and, you know, really gaudy stat lines that were kind of these, he was kind of the poster boy for, like, you know, when you would complain about an empty stats player, right? And Kevin Love was one of the guys that would always be referenced. That being said, he is right in line with that Cedric Ceballos type, right? To kind of transition over, like, you're not going to win a championship with Kevin Love as your best player. You're not even going to be a contender or anywhere close to it. But he is the type of player that I would be looking toward to, that I think would help push every other young player into a more natural role on the team. Now, the question for one is price. And I would not in any chance or any way, shape or form give up, you know, Ingram, Russell, top three pick for Kevin Love. But the other assets, I'd be willing to give a couple of them up for him to assume that role. Now, with that said, I can't conceive of why Cleveland would deal with us outside of the context of a three-way deal, right, where they get back somebody who's more ready to contribute to a championship team in the, you know, 2018-19 season, or I'm sorry, next season, 17-18. We don't have anybody on our roster that would be able to replace Kevin Love's immediate caliber of impact. So, but if you could find a three-way trade where they can get that guy and then another team gets some younger players, that is something that I would do. Is that the type of deal though that you would expect the Lakers to be pursuing?
I'm not exactly sure, but I would say that Love sort of checks off a lot of those boxes that we were discussing earlier, as he's a star player. He's got championship experience. Look, Kevin Love is in the All-Star game basically every year. Now, you could say that maybe that's because in the last couple of years in Cleveland, he's been on winning teams. But even his last, like, I think year or two in Minnesota, he was on the All-Star team.
Well, yeah, he's an All-Star, but he's not a star. I would make a distinction between, like, kind of got the superstar, star, All-Star. He's on that, like, third or fourth tier of NBA, you know, of NBA players. But so is Sabalos, which is the guy that I keep going back to, right? To
yeah, like, so, I mean, Kevin Love is a top... He's a top 30 player, like, in the league.
Sure.
Right? So, sure. I mean, you know, we can argue semantics all you want. He's worlds better than anyone that's on the Lakers roster now, right?
Agreed.
That doesn't mean... And there's an argument to be made that it may be years before anyone reaches the level that Kevin Love was at the year that he got traded for Andrew Wiggins.
But I guess what my question is that not okay? You know, in terms of the fact that these young guys are so far off, is that unacceptable?
No. It's not unacceptable. And in fact, you're talking... So earlier, you were saying the Lakers are years away and that they need to recognize that. And my sort of nodding with you, but also stating the point that they need to have a plan on what steps need to get them to where they're getting closer, right? Without mortgaging the entire future, without going all in, right? Like sort of hedging their bets a little bit. And I think that this is not with Love specifically, but that type of deal is, I think, what they'll be looking for.
No, I really like that you brought his name up, because he, you know, Laker fans, we've all got our eyes on the Jimmy Butlers of the world and the Paul Georges, and they're a clear tier above the caliber of player that Kevin Love is. But like you said, he would represent kind of a bridge into that, you know, 30-35 win caliber of team. Now, whether it's Kevin Love or whether it's some other guy, right? And if that's something that they can pull off without giving up one of their top three assets in, you know, Russell Ingram and hopefully, knock on wood, top three pick, which became less likely as the Lakers beat the Memphis Grizzlies. If they can do that, then yeah, I would support that. And, you know, Love has an opt out after the 2019 season. So yes, that would sync up, you know, the Mozgov and Dane contracts expire in 2020. And frankly, and I know this is nails on a chalkboard to Laker fans, 2020 is the year that I have circled for the Lakers to start just getting into the conversation of being a contending type of team. Not even full-blown contention, but that's when the current young guys, you know, are going to be closer to that age where they'll be ready to do that. They'll have more space, even with re-signing young guys. You know, they'll still have more cap space with Mozgov and Deng expiring. So, you know, a guy like Kevin Love really kind of syncs up well with that. What I want to transition to, though, I guess is... how aggressively do you think the Lakers would look to move the three assets and players that are presumably in that top three that we consider of with Ingram top three and Russell, right? How aggressively do you expect the Lakers to look to move those with the idea in mind of getting a better player than Kevin Love in return?
We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, in a minute. This is the Los Angeles Lakers Basketball Network.
Fantasy basketball seasons are over now, but you can still play for pride or cold hard cash with your friends through the Draft app. Search Draft in the App Store and it'll be the first option to come up. Now, Pete doesn't know this yet, but I am officially challenging him to a duel for pride on Wednesday's slate. I'll be sure to flex my fantasy muscle by using my best fantasy skill, drafting. For real, guys, it's an awesome way to play daily fantasy sports, and you're three times more likely to win on Draft than you are through FanDuel or DraftKings. You can play on the Draft app by using the promo code ABPN, or you can play at playdraft.com/ABPN to get 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $600. So at me, my name is Tom Z, T-O-M-Z-E-E, and I'll probably accept all your guys' challenges. So we'll see who will come up on top of the fantasy hill. All right, back to the show.
Yeah, so I don't think they'll be active at all with Ingram. So let's say that there are two types of deals, or let's say that there are three types of deals, right? Deal one is I call you,
okay.
Right? Deal two is you call me, And deal three is sort of like the let's put out feelers to each other type of
thing. Our eyes meet right? across the room?
Sort of, right? Like when I say, so the... When I say, like, I'm calling you, it's like, you're Larry Bird, I'm Magic Johnson.
I don't like that at all, but I'll entertain your hypothetical.
Okay, sorry. I'm Larry Bird, and you're Magic Johnson.
Okay, that's better.
Okay.
Yeah. We're of a certain age, Darius. You can't just be throwing that out there and fighting
words. Okay.
Carry
on. When I open up your warm up jersey, though, you're still wearing that Celtics.
No, yeah. Continue.
Anyways, so you call me and say, Larry, I want Paul George, right? And so that's an example of that. The other way around is, you know, I'm whoever and you're Magic Johnson again, and I say, I want Brandon Ingram. Right. Mm-hmm. And then the third is kind of like, hey, so you've got some guys around there. What would it take to do X, Y, and Z? Or how do you feel about this guy on my roster? Right. And so when I talk about Ingram, I think that guys may call about Ingram, but the Lakers are not putting out any calls to anyone. And the first name that they're bringing up is Ingram. I think that Russell may be a guy that they'd be willing to listen on. So if a team calls them and says, and I don't even think they're going to be willing to listen on Ingram. I think that if the Bulls were to call and say, hey, Jimmy Butler's available, they would. I think Magic Johnson would pivot quickly and say, okay, well, let's build a deal around D'Angelo Russell.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Like, I just think that that's how it would work. Like, you know.
Yeah,
for better or for worse.
No, I see that as well. There's a couple of, so yeah, and then with the top three pick and you know, I would imagine we're on the same page. I think they're going to be a lot more willing to let number three go if they get it than number one or number two. And I don't know if getting either Fultz or Ball makes Russell more available. I think that it would be a mistake for that to factor into the decision, because I think he's shown, you know, even with the dud of a game against the Clippers, he's scoring like, you know, he's putting up like 21-6 since moving to quote unquote shooting guard, right?
He's really good, man. I'm going to say it almost every time his name comes up. He's really good.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah. I don't know. I'm in kind of give up mode on defending how good of a player he is, but.
I'm just going to keep repeating it so that, you know, people just understand it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate that. You can carry the
water
for me, man.
Sorry.
Sure. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to.
Basically, what I'm saying is, I don't think Fultz or Ball, like, they should play with D'Angelo Russell. And now, if that means if a guy like Russell, if Butler becomes available, and, you know, there are a couple things involved with that. Kind of the devil lurking in the background is the Boston Celtics and the assets that they have with this year's Brooklyn pick and next year's Brooklyn pick. The reality of the NBA right now is that if the Celtics want a player on the trade block, they will get him because they have the assets to be able to acquire him that exceed what anybody else in the league has. So that makes... Like, if they wanted Jimmy Butler at this trade deadline, they would have gotten him. And the same could be said over the course of the summer. And especially with how the Cavs have kind of tanked, I think that they made a mistake not shooting their shot. But, hey, I'm all good with that because the only score that matters to me is 17-16, and they're up in the championships right now. So, all good. They missed out on that. So, that being said, with a guy like Butler, I don't think just Russell is going to be enough to get him. I think George is a little bit different because he's made it be known that he wants to go to LA. But anyway, rambling aside, the top three pick, I think that they'll be very willing to move it if it's three and not as much if it's one or two. I also agree that I don't think they're going to call looking to trade Russell, but I think they're going to be more willing, a lot more willing with him than with Ingram, as you said. We're in agreement on that. The one caveat that I would throw in there that I think is interesting is Paul George, D'Angelo Russell, and Julius Randle all share the same agent, who's Aaron Mintz. And I think that Mintz would probably be very much like to have three of the most important players on the Lakers all at the same time. That's a lot of power. Now, that might be the exact reason why a guy like Rob Pelinka would not want something like that to go down. But there's also some difficulty in, is there positional overlap with Paul George and Ingram? Who does George want to play with alongside in a situation like that? So anyway, all of that being said, I agree with your order of I think Ingram would have to be a godfather offer. I think they're going to be willing, perhaps more willing than you think, to get rid of Russell. And I think it's only, top two protected, I guess, and three would be the first asset on the table if they got that.
Yeah, I think if the pick is three, they're trading it, like almost 100%. And that's just, and maybe that's a case of me sort of projecting what I would do, but I would probably trade that pick.
Okay.
Nothing against Josh Jackson or any of the other guys. It's just that,
it's funny because Josh Jackson on that wing between Ingram and Russell, although maybe he's not in between, with some dog in him that plays defense, that's got better pedigree. He's Josh Jackson in a lot of ways is the guy that you described.
No. And when I watched him play, I was sufficiently impressed with what he brought to the table. It was so I'm going to sidebar here for a second and I'm going to go on a quick little tangent. I was listening to a podcast between Bill Simmons, every Lakers favorite person, and Kevin Durant. And they had this really wide-ranging calm conversation, and they sort of talked about how those Thunder came up and talked about a lot of different stuff. And Bill Simmons started to talk about this year's draft. And Kevin Durant said something that I thought was really funny, because Bill Simmons said, yeah, this draft is going to be amazing. It's like considered one of the best drafts in the past like decade or whatever. And Kevin Durant says, that's great and all, but is that really going to be that this year? Because he said, I feel like that sort of same thing has been said about other recent drafts. And then, when you get up here and start to play, it's a different deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to bring it back to our conversation now, because, I'm impressed with Lonzo Ball. I'm impressed with Josh Jackson. I've seen some film now on Markel Fultz. Shout out to Pete. Your video was really good. Check it out on LakerFilmRoom.com. And I'm impressed with him too, right? And then I think about, I was also impressed with D'Angelo Russell. I was impressed with a lot of these guys, right? And I'm telling you, man, these guys get to the league and they're not ready.
No, it's not even like,
and it's like they're not even close. And it's like they're not even close.
Like what? Karl Anthony Towns is a monster. Andrew Wiggins is the highest scoring player from his draft. And Minnesota's a bad basketball team.
Yes.
Like young players are not good at basketball. So like the idea of if we can get a young lead guard in this draft, and then that makes a Russell expendable. Like, have we not learned anything from watching?
Yeah, like I'm tired. Like, exactly. You were just, I'm going to cut you off just because, I heard someone say it the other day, like, you're preaching to the preacher.
right. But, not even the choir, so, right? Yeah,
you're preaching to the preacher. So I'm with you 100%. And I'm starting to be of the mindset. So we were talking about, the number three pick. Like, I might even trade the number two or the number one pick. I might do that. You know why? Because so many GMs in the league, I think, are infatuated with this idea that they get to select their guy to be. And maybe Pelinka and Magic will feel the same way, because all these guys on the roster now, none of those guys are their guys. Right. They're like the previous regime's guys. Although, you know, most of the scouting department who had supposedly a heavy hand in selecting these players are like still there, right? Like they let go of Mitch and Jim, who sort of pulled the trigger, but all of the institutional knowledge that helped sort of funnel up and put all of that information like into a nice little package for these guys to sort of make that final decision, those guys are still there. So maybe Magic and Palinka would feel the same way. Like, oh, like speaking as Magic and Palinka, like, oh, well, we kept our pick. And so now let's make it, right? We're going to put our stamp on the organization and select our guy. But like I said, I'm of the mindset of you don't need to draft another 19-year-old kid to come in here and live up to expectations or not live up to expectations. And unless he's like really like a Towns level performer in year one, essentially, you know, get called a bust or whatever, right? Because he's 19-year-old and even though he's good, he and has all this potential, he's not likely to be a very good NBA player in terms of helping you actually win. And I think that when we're talking about the Lakers taking the next step, I think, you know, that jump. So I was anticipating a leap of anywhere from 7 to like, or even 8, like 8 to 12 win increase from last year to this year.
Right.
You know, like I thought the Lakers would be at about 27 to 29 wins and that was about where they'd be. And if the high end hit, they would be around the 35 range. The Lakers have 22 wins right now.
Part
and
of
there's
that,
some winnable games left
on the
schedule.
I think that was a more achievable goal than
with Lou Williams, maybe?
Yeah, I do think.
Right, sure.
Lou Williams and even guys like Dang
and Mozgov.
Like,
yeah, they could have helped. Like,
they're overpaid, but they're functional. You know,
they're
going to win you games as opposed to Zubats, who's like fun to watch and he scores, but he has no idea what's going on defense. You know, like it's just more young players that don't know what the hell they're doing, right? It's like just adding on top of that.
And that's what I'm saying when it comes to this right here. Is that, yes, I think a lot of Lakers fans are infatuated with the fact that they could, like, Lonzo Ball will be a Laker next year. And that sounds great, right? I think even you and I would be like, oh, man, the Lakers
drafted
Lonzo Ball, right? Yeah, like, we'd be happy as hell. But I think then reality sets in terms of, okay, even if you're sold on him being a legitimate star player, we both know that that's not happening in year one and likely not until year three or year four.
Right.
And I think the Lakers are looking to get better, functionally better, not just we've got a name player, right? Not just, oh, well, now we have Kevin Love or now we have Jimmy Butler or now we have Paul George and we sort of, you know, took a stack of our chips and slid them into the middle and got a star guy. I think that all of those things are, it's not just the name, right? It's actually getting you closer, and even if it's incrementally, to the place that you want to get to. And if that means giving up a couple of the young guys to do it, ideally the ones that you want to give up and not the ones that someone is holding your feet over the fire to give up, right? Where you can't get too desperate. But I think that that's where they want to go. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, I can nitpick, or I would have strong opinions if they traded Ingram or Russell. Because I think that would be silly to me in a lot of ways. These guys are so young or whatever. That's why I'm saying if you're going to trade someone, trade Jordan Clarkson. You've already paid him and he's on a reasonable contract. If you're going to trade someone, trade Julius Randle. He's going to be up for extension and he's actually a good player, right? Like, I think that there are reasons why you would want to sort of start to turn these younger guys into better functional NBA players.
You're preaching to the preacher, as you say, with those names. However, I think that pretty much everybody but Ingram is in a more precarious position. Again, the theme is how you want things to be versus how they are. And I do think that everybody but Ingram, and even Ingram to an extent, is on the table this summer. And that's how I expect the front office to operate. And I will be pleasantly surprised if they're able to be patient enough and look to build a bridge and not give up too much and kind of deal the lower tier prospects or that have different financial considerations going on. But I think that they're going to cash in one of their bigger chips over the course of this summer, and it remains to be seen who it's going to be. I think I actually think Russell is the most likely to go of all of them, of all of the better chips that we have, but I'll be surprised if one of them doesn't move. So that's all the time we got for today. I'm Pete at Laker Film Room. This is the one and only Darius Soriano at Form Blue and Gold, produced as always by at LFR Tommy. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll catch you next time.
Just give me a chance to think. It takes me a little while to get wound up.
I know it does take you a while to think.
Rebound of Vlade. Nice rebound. De Vlade.
Oh, Magic ahead. Shoulder fake. Goes under and scores. With a standing ovation. Listen to the crowd.
I think that is a cosmetic call, baby.
Okay, kid, you're all right in my book.
Will you get these idiots out of here?